ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் டாட் ஆர், தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். தி டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் கர்மா மேனேஜ்மெண்ட் செகண்ட் பார்ட், லோக்கல் மார்டின் லூதர் கிங், பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க்யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
As most of you know, we've been invited to participate in the island celebration of Martin Luther King Day on January 21st as one of the churches representing a major faith on the island, Hinduism. So I thought I'd begin by reading the short talk I prepared for that event, because most of you won't be there. When we reflect on the life of Dr. Martin Luther King, we of course think of the civil rights movement and the success of the movement's efforts to eliminate racial discrimination laws in the United States. Unfortunately, though, racial discrimination still exists in the United States, not, of course, in the form of laws, but in the form of attitudes. This problem is not simply a national one, but a global one as well. One of the consequences of the September 11th terrorist attacks was increased media coverage depicting people in a number of countries who strongly hate the United States, some to the point of wishing violence upon it. Watching these shocking reports on television, we cannot help but be impressed by the extent and seriousness of the problem of prejudice. Attitudes of prejudice toward those of a different race, nation, or religion can start simply as distrust, which can then deepen into dislike, and deepen further into hatred, which can turn into a desire to inflict violence. Are we born with these attitudes? Certainly not. We are taught them at home, at school, and even in some religious institutions. Dr. Martin Luther King, after giving careful thought to the problem of discriminatory laws, selected Mahatma Gandhi's tactic of nonviolent resistance as an effective method for overcoming these unjust laws. What today, then, is an effective way for solving our current problem, which is overcoming attitudes of prejudice and discrimination? It is education. Instead of teaching children to be intolerant and to dislike and distrust, hate and inflict violence on those who are different, we can teach them to be tolerant, and like and trust, befriend and help. Excellent resources for promoting tolerance are distributed by the Southern Poverty Law Center in its Teach Tolerance program. These are available on its website at splcenter.org. One of their publications is entitled 101 Tools for Tolerance and contains simple ideas for increasing tolerance for you personally, in your home, in your school, in your workplace, and in your community. Here are two of the ideas for the home. Take the family to an ethnic restaurant and learn about more than just the food. The second, invite someone of a different background to join your family for a meal or holiday. The booklet concludes with a pledge of tolerance that I would like to read. Tolerance is a personal decision that comes from a belief that every person is a treasure. I believe that America's diversity is its strength. I also recognize that ignorance, insensitivity, and bigotry can turn that diversity into a source of prejudice and discrimination. To help keep diversity a wellspring of strength and make America a better place for all, I pledge to have respect for people whose abilities, beliefs, culture, race, sexual identity, or other characteristics are different from my own. To fulfill this pledge, I will examine my own biases and work to overcome them. Set a positive example for my family and friends. Work for tolerance in my own community and speak out against hate and injustice. Please sign and mail a copy of this pledge to the National Campaign for Tolerance, Montgomery, Alabama. So, I know you've been sleepless waiting for the continuation of our effective karma management seminar. You just were rushing to the temple this morning. And for those who don't recall or weren't here, I'll try and give a simple review. We're developing some principles for effective karma management. It's like the 7 habits of highly effective people, you know. So we're responding to that with something Hindu. We're going to come up with 7 or more principles for effective karma management along the same line. So we developed a few more to present, but we'll review just to give continuity. And I'll read some of the beginning material, which is new, a new introduction here. The concept of karma has spread beyond the confines of the Asian religions that conceived it and has become a core concept of today's yoga and New Age movements, and is even mentioned regularly on American mainstream television programs. Right? It's amazing how many times you hear, well, that's my karma, popping up. Just on a regular program, they'll throw that out at you. Last year, in discussing the concept with a junior college class in Hawaii, KCC, a student astutely defined karma in her own words as, what goes around, comes around. That caught it. Unfortunately, most individuals' understanding of karma is at best limited to thinking about it as an abstract principle without applying it to one's life. This is the equivalent of understanding all the laws of nutrition, being able to get an A on any test on the subject, but following a personal diet of junk food 3 times a day. So, the nutritionist understands it intellectually, but hasn't changed her diet at all. What we have learned is not influencing how we live. The study of karma can be effectively approached in a 3-step process. Firstly, dispelling common misconceptions, that's first. Secondly, acquiring a correct intellectual understanding of key concepts, second. Thirdly, utilizing that understanding to refine one's actions in and reactions to life. So that's the seminar approach, when we actually apply it to our life and not just our intellectual understanding. So common misconceptions. So we have 2 common misconceptions here to start. You yourself have probably heard the most common false concept about karma on a number of occasions. It goes something like this. Nothing but bad things happen to me. It's my karma. And even when I strive to do better, my striving has no effect upon it. So why even try to make my life amount to anything? It's truly hopeless. You heard that one? This misconcept must be rejected for two important reasons. The first is that we can actually change our karma through the principles of effective karma management. The second is that how we live in this life creates the karma we face in our future lives. So why not consciously use the law of karma to create a future that is filled with pleasant experiences rather than painful ones? A second common false concept about karma you have probably heard also goes something like this. My life is in a state of chaos. Everything is going wrong. And it all started 3 months ago when Saturn entered Taurus and my karma changed. I have been advised that if I can successfully appease Saturn through having a priest do regular Sani Puja, my life will be problem-free. So that has become the entire focus of my religious life at this time, attending Sani Puja. This misconception must also be rejected. It attributes the cause of our problem to the planet Saturn, rather than to our own actions in a past life. It is like pleading with the jailer to be let out of jail simply because it is an unpleasant experience. Having forgotten completely about the crime you committed that put you in jail in the first place. So those are misconceptions, developing correct conceptions, which we won't read, that's a bit tedious, but we've got 10 of those, 10 correct concepts about karma. Then we get into our principles for effective karma management. We'll just quickly review the ones we went over last phase. The first principle is to forego retaliation, which is the idea if someone does something that harms us, the first instinctive reaction, of course, is, well, let's harm them back. I suffered. They should suffer just as much as I suffered, so I'm going to make them suffer. So, of course, if we succumb to that, we can't do anything deeper. We're stuck in a cycle of endless hurting and getting hurt. It just goes on forever because every time we hurt back, of course, what will happen? We'll create the event of getting hurt in the future, and then, of course, we'll have to hurt back, and then we'll experience that again. So it's like we're stuck in this cycle of retaliation until we step out of it and say, okay, no more retaliation. Second principle, accept responsibility. That's the idea that whatever happens to us is our creation. If something wonderful happens, we have ourselves to congratulate. If something terrible happens, we have ourselves to blame. But unfortunately, because most experiences come to us through another person, it's easy to blame the other person, right? That's the person that hit me with the car and broke my leg. I'm upset with that person. I blame that person, where, of course, we need to blame ourselves. I caused that to happen. The person was just the instrument for returning my karma to me. So until we accept responsibility, we can't make much progress in controlling our karma because we're always blaming it on someone else, particularly the bad things that happen. We're kind of willing to accept that the good things maybe we created. But if it's a bad thing, no way. We didn't create this. That's someone else's fault. So that's accepting responsibility, which we did last phase. Forgive the offender. That's taking it one step further. The person who drove the car that broke your leg, you make them some cookies. Take them a garland. Really forgive them by a gesture of forgiveness. That's taking it a step further, which makes sure it's out of your mind, because when you give something, you've really forgotten it and moved on. So the Tirukkural has a beautiful statement on that. If you return kindness for injuries received and forget both, Those who harmed you will be punished by their own shame. So that just captures the point perfectly. Someone injures you, so you just don't forgive them. You return the injury with a kindness. And forget both. Let it go. Beautiful statement. Fourth principle, which I think is the last one we did, was consider the consequences. So the idea here is, before acting, think about the consequences of an act. Quite often we don't take the time to think. You know, we're responding emotionally in some way. We're reacting to something that happened to us previously. So our action isn't necessarily coming from our wisest state of mind. It's coming from, at least partially, from a reactive state of mind. We're upset with something that happened to us, so we kind of act in a partially upset way. Maybe not totally unreasonable, but it's not as wise an action as we could conceive of if we were totally detached and considered the consequences. In the letter in the Lord Ganesha book, I'll read that again. It's so beautiful and pertinent. Keep track of your paces, for your walk makes marks. Each mark is a reward or a stumbling block. Learn to look at the step you have made and the step you have not made yet. This brings you close to me. So it's the step you have not made yet that we're talking about, the step we're about to make. If we think carefully about it, consider the consequences. Is this going to reward us or punish us? So that's the idea there. Consider the consequences. So, you're ready for the fifth principle. Create no negative karmas. Now that we have a good grasp of the karmic consequences of various kinds of actions, what is needed next to progress even further in the management of karma is a firm commitment to refrain from actions that create new negative karma. Perhaps we should all take a pledge, such as, I promise henceforth to refrain from all actions that create negative karmas. Would you sign that? That would be a good commitment, right? I promise henceforth to refrain from all actions that create negative karmas. How do we know if a specific action will create negative karma or not? Scriptures such as the Tirukkural may make mention of it. We can ask a Hindu religious leader his or her opinion. If young, we could ask our parents. And once we get the knack of it, our own conscience might be able to provide the answer most of the time. Gurudeva tells us about creating no new negative karmas. Wise handling of karma begins with the decision to carry the karma we now have cheerfully and not add to it. Repeat, and not add to it. A firm decision to live in such a way as to create no new negative karmas is a sound basis for living a religious life, for following the precepts of Dharma and avoiding that which is adharmic. So that's Gurudeva's advice there, to make a firm decision to live in such a way as to create no new negative karmas. Moving on to the sixth principle and the longest one, mitigate past karma. Now that we have stopped acting in ways that create new negative karmas, our life is sublime enough to focus on ridding ourselves of karmas of the past, mitigating them, meaning to make less harsh, painful, or severe. So one of the points is, as long as we're still creating new negative karma, our life tends to be upset. We tend to be disturbed. Oh, regularly. Things are not calm enough. Things are not calm enough to reflect wisely. So once we stop creating new karma, negative karma, then life calms down. And we're in a position where we can face our past karmas and start to mitigate them, make them less severe. To better understand mitigation, let's make a comparison to the judicial system. You commit armed robbery and receive a 10 to 20 year sentence. But due to good behavior in prison, you are released after only 5 years. You have mitigated your sentence, made it less severe due to your good behavior. So that shows what mitigation means. Your behavior in the present has changed the sentence you would otherwise face. The punishment that's coming to you has been reduced by what you're doing in the present. Let's now take an example of karma that is mitigated. You are destined to lose a leg in this life because you caused someone to lose a leg in a past life. If living a selfish, low-minded kind of life, the karma would come full force and you would lose the leg. Remember, this isn't merging with Shiva, this example. However, if you are a kindly person who regularly helps others, the karma would be mitigated, and you might read in the morning paper about someone losing a leg and take on the emotion of that experience as if it happened to you. Later on, when hiking, you stumble and your leg is cut, but only slightly. The full force of the karma was avoided by our kind and helpful actions in the present. It was mitigated. So, how do we mitigate karma? Sounds like a good thing, right? Maybe we should do more of this. So, as this example points out, one way of mitigating karma is helping others. Karma yoga, performance of good deeds, thus acquiring merit, which registers as a new and positive karma, is one way of alleviating the heaviness of some of our past karmas. So that's the simplest way. Just being a good person, helping others, selfless action, actually changes how our karma comes back to us and mitigates it, makes it less severe. Second way, worship, bhakti yoga, which is intense enough to cause us to receive the grace of the gods, can change the patterns of karma dating back many lives, clearing and clarifying conditions that were created hundreds of years ago and are but seeds now, waiting to manifest in the future. The key word here is intensity. Worship which is intense enough. Dropping by the temple for 15 minutes on the way home from work is unlikely to accomplish the task. How do we generate intensity then? Pilgrimage is an excellent way to generate an intensity of worship. Over the years, many of Gurudeva's devotees have pilgrimaged to India, visiting the major temples such as Chidambaram, Rameshwaram, and Palani Hills. In certain instances, they have come back and are different. They physically look a little different, behave differently, and fit back into life in a more positive way than before. Why is this? Their karma has been changed by the grace of the gods. So you may have noticed that in watching inner searchers come back, particularly if you don't go on the trip. You know, you watch who goes, you say goodbye to them, and then they come back 1 or 2 months later, and you notice a difference. You say, boy, it looks a little different, acts a little different. So why is that? That's because the karma has been changed by the grace of the gods. Another way of generating an intensity of worship is through taking a vrata, such as for 6 days of Skanda Shashti. This would involve fasting during the day, and attending temple on each of the 6 days can generate an intensity of worship sufficient to mitigate one's karma. A third way that Gurudeva has given us for mitigating karma is penance, prayaschitta. Gurudeva has described this as punishing yourself now and getting it over with, instead of waiting for your karma to manifest a punishment in the future. So, if any of you have done the walking prostrations up Sanmarga, that'll probably sound familiar. Definitely causes those knees to hurt. Typical form of penance is to perform walking prostrations such as around a sacred lake, up a sacred path, or around the temple. Have you seen those pictures of Buddhists going around the mountain? I mean, it must take forever, but they're prostrating around a sacred mountain. And very impressive. You can also do penance that is directly related to a misdeed. Let's take the example of a teacher who frequently used corporal punishment to discipline students, but now strongly feels corporal punishment is inappropriate. An appropriate penance would be to print and distribute to teachers literature on alternative methods to corporal punishment. This type of penance should only be undertaken, Gurudeva says, after a certain degree of remorse is shown and the urgency is felt by the devotee to rid his mind of the plaguing matter. Otherwise, it doesn't work right. It's like the issue has to pop up by itself from the subconscious. All of a sudden, we start to feel really bad about something we did or something we did over many years. It just really bothers us. That's the state of mind in which this type of penance works. We're trying to get rid of something which is really, really bothering us. It popped up all by itself. We didn't go looking for it. It's just there. And now we want to get rid of it. So we need to match the penance to the deed. So those are the three ways given to us by Gurudeva in merging with Shiva and living with Shiva for mitigating, making less severe our karma. First one is karma yoga, selfless deeds. Second one is worship, but needs to be intense. We really have to get the grace of the gods. It has to be that intense. And the third one is penance, prayaschitta.